nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, the first time in 16 months we're back in the room together, not the virtual room, it's nice. This is the July 26, 2021 public meeting of the Planning Board of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon and State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat, and the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the township website, the bulletin boards at the front of the municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, and faxed to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
We're back in person. Game on, buddy.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Right now, Malay and Shike are absent.
No, you got to do a random call.
All right, all right. I don't think that could work.
See, that's like a preemptive strike.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, look where it just came from.
I know. I was trying to figure out how I could eat that shell to not be
tasteless.
Ms. Butcher?
Here you go.
Yes.
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Here.
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Paul Malay next.
Mr. Malay?
Absent.
Tie.
Ms. Kleinhans?
Here.
Mr. Scheich?
Absent.
Mine.
Mr. Lazarus?
Here.
And Mr. Sumay?
Here. I didn't want to declare myself absent. That's why I hesitated. You all may declare me absent, but that's a different... All right, we have a quorum. Meeting minutes, I think we're going to carry those. We didn't get them out, but that's no problem. We'll do them next meeting. We have a resolution authorizing Burgess Associates to perform a preliminary investigation as to whether the properties located at 10 and 12 Gray Rock Road, Block 7701, Lots 2, 3, and 4 meet the criteria for designation as a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment.
Can I give a brief explanation?
Please.
So, the Township Council adopted Resolution Number 107-2021 on July 14th, 2021. And in that resolution, it directed that the Planning Board conduct a preliminary investigation of the area comprising properties located at 2, 10, and 12 Gray Rock Road, which are designated on the township tax maps as Block 7701, Lots 2, 3, and 4, and to make a recommendation to the governing body whether or not that area constitutes a non-condemnation area in need of redevelopment. Now, some members of the board may recall that the board has been through this with respect to the Beaverbrook Homestead
right.
project, but it's been a couple of years, and I had sent out back then, I believe it was 2018, a copy of Chapter 11 from the Cox Zoning and Land Use book, and I had marked it up with the steps in redevelopment. Step one is that the governing body directs the Planning Board to do an investigation. We're at step two. Step two is the big decision tonight is, do you hire Tom and Burgess Associates to do this study, or do you hire some outside person? And I assume that you guys are going to want to hire Tom, so I've prepared the following resolution. And if you don't want to hire him, you'll tell me. But this is a one-page resolution, which is also a rarity.
For you.
For me. So, whereas the mayor and the council of the Township of Clinton adopted Resolution 107-2021 on July 14, 2021, which directed the Clinton Township Planning Board to conduct a preliminary investigation to determine whether a study area, which is described in detail below, is an area in need of redevelopment as a non-condemnation redevelopment area. You don't have to take this if you don't want, okay? Whereas the study area consists of the following lots as set forth on the Township of Clinton tax maps, Block 77.01, Lots 2, 3, and 4. Whereas the board wishes to engage its planning expert to conduct a study and evaluate whether the property in the study area is an area in need of redevelopment as a non-condemnation redevelopment area under the criterion set forth in NJSA 40A:12A-5 and -6. And that's the redevelopment statute. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the board, by motion duly made and seconded on July 26th. Okay, that's right. As follows. Number one, board planning experts Joseph H. Burgess and Tom Behrens and other professional planners from Burgess Associates are hereby engaged and directed to conduct a study and evaluate whether the property in the study area is an area in need of redevelopment as a non-condemnation redevelopment area under the criterion set forth in NJSA 40A:12A-5 and -6, which study and evaluation shall be submitted to the board for further action. Number two, the board may designate other professional planners from the firm of Burgess Associates to provide planning services related to the preparation and adoption of the study and evaluation. Number three, notice of the adoption of this resolution shall be published in an official newspaper of the township and in accordance with the local, in accordance with the redevelopment law, and I'll put a citation in there. That's the short resolution.
Right. So it's basically the process is the governing body asks,
tells us,
commission a study, and then the process continues. That's right. What we're doing is
when the study comes back, then you guys have to hold a public hearing. And the public hearing is on, it's not the normal type of notice. Instead of just a notice in a newspaper, this is a notice. It's got to be two consecutive weeks in the paper. Hmm. And then Tom will be sworn, put under oath. He'll explain the study. Members of the public actually, under this statute, they have the right, they don't even have to appear. It's as if it's almost like a virtual hearing. They can just send a letter. They can make comments like that. They can appear. They can ask questions. They can present their own witnesses. And then the board, after this hearing, makes a recommendation whether or not this study area is an area in need of redevelopment, non-condemnation area in redevelopment. That recommendation, whether it's yay or nay, goes back to the governing body, and then the governing body actually makes the decision and whether or not it's an area in need of redevelopment. If they decide that it's an area in need of redevelopment, then they have to make a decision. A redevelopment ordinance will then be drafted and adopted. They can do it themselves, or they can refer it to the planning board to do it. Hopefully, they'll do it themselves.
Yes, that's a good summary. Thank you.
This is my editorial comment.
Any questions from the board? If not, is there a motion to authorize Burgess and Associates to perform a preliminary investigation?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Lazarus.
Seconded.
Thank you, Ms. Kleinhans. Roll call.
Ms. Butcher?
Yes.
Mr. Geiser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Ms. Kleinhans?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
And Mr. Simmons?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, we have a public hearing. It is Ingerman Development Company, LLC, The Willows at Spruce Run, 1130 Route 22, Block 70, Lots 6 and 6.01, application 2021-07. The applicant is seeking preliminary site plan and variance relief to construct a multifamily inclusionary housing development.
Mr. Chairman, I have to recuse. It's 7:10, so I'll be back in the judge's chambers.
Okay.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. All right.
All right. Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to see all of you in person. So good evening. First of all, can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yep. Good. Great. Good evening. My name is Kate Coffey. I'm an attorney from Day Pitney, and I'm here tonight on behalf of Ingerman Development Company, LLC, which is the contract purchaser of the subject property of the application. We are doing preliminary site plan application only. If approved, we will be back to the board seeking final site plan approval at a later date. The property that we are talking about this evening is Block 70, Lots 6 and 6.01, and the street address is 1726, and I have 1730 Route 31. I'm not sure if that's right. We're at 1730 Route 31.
No, we're at 1370.
Oh, there you go. All right. My own dyslexia. 1726 and 1730 Route 31. And we are proposing to consolidate those lots into a single lot. Lot 6.01 is currently occupied by the Spruce Run Veterinary Hospital, and Lot 6 is a successional wooded lot currently. The property is located in the AH9 Affordable Housing Zone, which was created by the Township Council Ordinance 1154-21. Which was adopted on June 9th, 2021. The applicant is proposing to develop the property with 6 multifamily residential apartment buildings. All of those residential buildings are proposed to be 3 stories in height. The applicant is also proposing 1 community building. There's a total of 66 market rate residential units and 80 affordable multifamily units, which equates to a 55% affordable set aside. The overall bedroom distribution is 52 one-bedroom units, 70 two-bedroom units, and 24 three-bedroom units. The applicant is requesting some relief this evening. We are requesting a variance from Ordinance Section 165-155.67 D, as in dog, which is to permit a retaining wall of varying height that's in excess of 6 feet, which is the maximum permitted by the ordinance, and the wall is not tiered. We are also seeking a design waiver from the tree replacement requirements that are found in Ordinance Section 165-77 D.
D or D?
D as in dog, again, thank you. I will just comment that in the board's planner's memo, there were some potential other areas where the board planner wondered if relief was necessary, and the applicant has determined that no relief is necessary and modifications can be made to the plans to avoid any relief.
And you're going
to
be...
We'll be providing
great
more testimony on that, but just so everybody
yep
isn't wondering when we're getting to it,
great,
I figured I'd give you a preview. In terms of our witnesses this evening, we have Brett Skapanitz of Dynamic Engineering. He is both the project engineer and the project the project planner. He's going to give an overview of the property, an orientation to the surrounding area, and lead us through the proposed development. And he will also be discussing the relief that the applicant is seeking and the justifications for that relief. We have Mary Johansson of Kitchen & Associates. She's the project architect, and she's going to be discussing the architectural features of the project, as well as Corey Chase from Dynamic Traffic. He's the project's traffic engineer, and he's going to be discussing circulation and traffic at the property. So with that, if it's acceptable to the board, I'd ask Mr. Skapanitz to join me and have him be sworn in, please.
Yeah, I'd like to swear in all the witnesses, both the applicant's 3 witnesses and the board witnesses. So anyone who's filed a report and could conceivably testify, please stand up. And I'm going to use the same order that Ms. Coffey did. So please, for the record, your name and spell your last name, even if Jackie knows it.
Sure. Brett Skapanitz. Last name is Skapinetz. My name is Engineering Consultants.
Okay. And you're the?
Site engineer and planner.
Right. And you're a PE,
yes,
and a PP.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Who's?
Nice to be Ms. Johansson.
Okay. Mary Johansson, Johannesen. I'm with Kitchen & Associates Services, Inc. I'm the project architect, and I'm licensed architect in New Jersey.
Okay.
Corey Chase with Dynamic Traffic, CoreyChase. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of New Jersey.
You're their traffic engineering expert. I might as well start here and then go this way.
Sure. Tom Behrens, last name, Behrens, board planner with Burgess Associates.
Jim Mazzucco, Mazzucco, with Bosenberg Landscape Architecture, board landscape architect. Matt Mulhall, Mulhall, M2 Associates, geologist and hydrogeologist for the town. Chip?
Larry Sevier, PLEIER, Mont McDonald, board engineer.
And you're a PA. Okay. Can everyone raise their right hand? Does everyone swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give during this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Drill. Mr. Skafinets, once you get yourself situated, could you please introduce yourself to the board and tell them about your experience and credentials?
Sure. Again, Brad Skafinets, Dynamic Engineering Consultants, currently director of Dynamic for the last 15 years, got over 25 years of engineering experience. I have a bachelor's degree in civil engineering, bachelor of science in civil engineering from Rutgers University. I've been qualified over 150 different boards in the state, including this board in recent years on several applications, and my license is still current.
You've been qualified for this board, and I don't see any problems. Anybody have any? Great, we accept.
Thank you.
Mr. Skafinets, it's just if you don't mind also talking about your planning adventure.
And I'm also a licensed professional planner, and that license is still current. And I've testified in that capacity and before several boards as well.
Okay.
So you're going to accept him both as an engineering
and a planner, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Skafinets, if you could please orient us to the property and the surrounding location.
Sure. I want to stay seated. I'll just use the pointer to run through. So I have first exhibit, which is essentially the same sheet within our site plan set. So the colored aerial map, which is sheet 2 of the site plan set. Do you want me to mark this?
Or but is it identical or has that been colorized?
It's identical. It's color.
No reason to mark it.
Okay.
Right. The color is new.
Right.
That's it, though. Yeah.
Well, the color is the same. It's within the set. Well, right. I didn't colorize.
Coloring the set. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So to orient the board, and this will be essentially the same orientation as we go through the site plan themselves. We're talking about the property, again, designated as Block 70. Lots 6, which is located right in the corner of the site with the veterinary hospital, and 6.01, which is the remainder of the tract that extends down towards the south branch of the Raritan River, which is the curved shape that I'm pointing to now. This is to the north of Route 78, just to the south of Route the 523 intersection. Hunterdon Healthcare is located where I'm pointing to the top. The old office building, I think it's older. I'm not sure if it's occupied right now. Benbrook and Benbrook is right north of it. Am I correct in saying this was Sherrod's, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I'm a North Harden grad, so I came back. So formerly Sherrod's located here, and obviously the intersection which leads into Halsted Street, leading into the town of Clinton, south of that. So the property is 12.19 acres. As Ms. Coffey noted, it's just partially developed with the veterinary hospital up front. Unique in shape, the property. What's carved out just below it is a, I believe it's a professional office just to the south. That's in this notch. Then the property also drops off pretty significantly. For the first half to third, it drops down gently. Then once we get down into the second half, it drops off pretty steep, 25% slopes, and which leads down towards the river. Additional unique things about this property, we know full well that the south branch of the Raritan River is designated the C1 waterway. So it has a 300-foot buffer associated with it from the top of the bank. Wetlands associated.
Yeah. You're doing good on the pronunciation and the speed. Just got to make it louder.
I got to make it louder. That was not. We didn't bet that.
My husband says he can hear me from across an airport. there you go.
So the other unique factors here are wetlands. The wetlands associated with this waterway, which we have had them flagged. We are in the process of completing the application to submit for a letter of interpretation for those wetlands, but the flagged wetlands, which are noted in our plans, have a 150-foot buffer associated with them. And that actually extends, as I'll get further into the plan, beyond that 300-foot buffer. Lastly, the site is also within Highlands, so there's a Highlands designation to this property and certain other characteristics that we need to work through with Highlands. Up until this point and through the development of our plan, we have had several conversations with Highlands to review the plan and to run through our proposed design. I'll just running up north and south, and no, Route 31 is off immediately to the left-hand side, which is a state highway. We recognize we do need to file for a state permit, a major access permit. This will, our proposal is for a right-in, right-out driveway, obviously, as Route 31 is a divided highway. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, and so will our traffic engineer, Corey Chase. Ms. Coffey went through the other aspects generally with respect to the zoning and site. So I guess with that, I'll just move right into the site plan itself.
Unless yes,
there's any other questions on the existing conditions. The next exhibit that
sorry,
I have.
Oops. Sorry, real quick before you go. The current lot, it doesn't, it's a little like a flag lot. The access is that little stub on the south there right now.
Oh, with respect to 101?
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Yes, correct. That's the little point of access to 31, which is this notch here.
And there isn't
otherwise
even.
Otherwise, lot 6 has the remainder of the frontage.
Right. So there isn't, is there currently a access?
No, there's not.
Okay, go ahead.
So this exhibit, which is entitled Site Plan Rendering, the preparation date of 7/26/2021, is a colorized version of our site plan, and landscaping plans merged together.
So this one we're going to mark as A1. And again, for the record, just read off that lower right-hand corner title block.
It's entitled Site Plan Rendering.
Site plan.
With preparation date of 7/26/21, sheet 1 of 1.
Okay.
And again, it's a colorized version of our site and landscaping plans merged together and colorized for presentation this evening.
Okay, so, Jack, it's going to be color rendered site plan dated
7/26/21. If it's okay for the rest of the public, I'll stand. I'm so used to standing. I'm okay with the laser pointer, but standing is my thing. So, same orientation as before, Route 31 running up and down on the left-hand side. The south branch of the Radden River is located in the lower right-hand end of the sheet. So we've zoomed in now to the site, and we show the proposed development plan. So, as Ms. Coffey noted, we've got 6 residential buildings. The square, I'll call them in the bronze color, to the site. We have 3,500 square foot center building located up front at the entranceway. And then in between that, we've got some other colors. Obviously, the darker gray, almost black color is our proposed pavement for parking areas. You'll see strips of gray running through, so we have a wide network of sidewalk as proposed that interconnects each one of these buildings and the community center building, and even extends out to Route 31. So we're proposing sidewalk along Route 31 along both frontages, that little notch and the lot 6 frontage of our property. Even though there is no sidewalk right now that runs to either side, we are putting that in place as part of this plan. From a driveway circulation standpoint, as I noted just briefly before, we have the right-in, right-out driveway that is located just to the south of the community center building, which is our main access to enter into the site. When we look at development of our accessway coming in, there are 24-foot aisles, so we have repeating the access, the driveway width per code. The parking spaces are 9 foot by 20 foot in size, which again meets ordinance requirements. We have 287 total parking spaces shown on the plan. You may note it says 288 in our chart. There was a one error. There's a row of 10 spaces by the community center building. It actually is 9, not 10. So that's where the miscount came from. So we're still 2 over what's required, which is 285.
Can you give us that again then? So how many are proposed?
287. Where 285 are required under RSIS guidelines.
Right.
Meaning the full distribution required by RSIS, and that's basically taking the distribution of the 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units and multiplying it by the factor put in RSIS. We come up with the 285. One thing I want to bring up while we're at parking, which came up, there was a comment about electric vehicles and the code that's recently been put in place for electric vehicles. We're willing to comply with that. So the way that the statute runs, if we basically have to look at 15% of our total count of parking, that equates to 44 parking spaces. We take one-third of that total, and that's the total number that has to be built out as EV stalls. That would be 15 stalls that would have to be put in as EV and just be able to be distributed. The difference, the 44 minus the 15, that's 29, that number needs to also be set up for future. So basically there's conduit runs that are put to those additional spaces. Huh. And then in that way it's set up so that way a future stall need to be put in place, they can be done so. So we are doing that.
Is that noted on the plan? Or
no, it's not. So to address a comment.
Right. You're asking that the board, if it approves this, impose a condition requiring that, correct?
So, Mr. Jones, in between the time that we submitted our application and now, the state has adopted into law the electrical vehicle.
No, correct.
Right. So our expectation is we will need to be complying eventually anyhow. And so for that reason, we thought we would talk about how we will comply this evening rather than spring it on you a year from now.
Right. But so you're suggesting, though, that if the board were to approve this, the board should just impose a condition saying you're going to comply with the...
Yeah, the applicant is willing to comply with that condition.
Now, one little twist with this, however. So Mr. Barons wrote in his memo about a request to try and look at banking or removing some stalls, 20 parking stalls on the site, to try and introduce a little bit more green. With this code, there's a credit, essentially like a two-for-one credit, for the amount of EV stalls that we put in, okay, we get to basically count those as two-for-one in the... Yeah. As far as a parking count, which would allow us, under the calculation and with our total number, to take 29 stalls and essentially remove or bank them in our plan, remove them from our plan.
And maybe I can explain the rationale for that. So the other Ingerman site in town, I think we held them to a parking requirement of 1.7 spaces per unit. The difference is that site has public transportation access to both the train and, I guess, arguably the bus. So we went with that lower standard. I would leave it to the developer to know what their parking needs should be. And to me, if they land bank it, the land is available if the parking demand increases over time. And this would be a way of having some additional green space in the interim. That's my thinking out loud in my memo.
Right. And we were looking at, when we took a look at this in the code, we looked at it a little bit slightly differently. We agree. I think it would be a plus to us to get a little bit more of the space if we could. We're okay with the loss of some of the spaces. Now, where the EV code allows us to get rid of 29, your memo says 20. We would prefer to stick to the 20 to be a bit safer. And what that does, actually, and not by way of necessarily banking it, we could not necessarily by banking it, but actually we would make some improvements to the plan, and this goes to the retaining wall and to our variance and some of your other professionals' comments with buffering. Our suggestion would be just to get rid of the 20 and not bank them and shift this wall back in a way to reduce its height, okay? That would be to reduce its height and also to be able to get a tier in there, one tier, within that wall, to be able to add some additional landscaping that we brought up in your landscaping memo.
But if you're not banking them,
but then you're not banking.
But then you're not banking.
Then you need relief.
Well, this would be.
So the interesting thing about the new electric vehicle charging law, which is hot off the presses, is it's our understanding that it permits you to reduce the number of parking spaces required per RSIS if you're providing the EV charging spaces.
I haven't looked at it. So you're saying that the law basically would supersede the MLUL on this point and the local ordinance.
And the
RSIS.
I will tell you, Mr. Joel, that's my reading of the law. As we said, it's hot off the presses. It's just about as new as it can be.
Can you give us the citation to that?
Sure. So I have the Senate bill number for
you. That's all right.
Yeah, and that's S3223. And it was signed into law on July 9th, 2021, which is why it really is about as new as you can be.
Yep.
What I think I would suggest, if it's acceptable to the board and to you, Mr. Drill, would be that if the concept is acceptable, that perhaps we would ask for the relief at this point since it's so brand new.
Yeah, just in case.
Exactly. My reading of the law is that no relief would actually be necessary, right, but I'd rather have it in place than come back to you with a non-compliant plan. So.
Can I make one other comment, too? I had a comment about the parking. I noticed that 26 stalls were around the community center. If you were supposed to calculate those, maybe under the old previous RSIS standards, those 26 were not necessarily distributed around the residential units. So when you're generating a parking demand based on units, my question to the applicant was the 26 stalls around the community facility, how did that work with their layout for tenant parking?
That we counted those in, because again, the community center here is not for anybody from the outside.
I understand, but there's quite a distance from some of the residential units.
Understood. This is not unusual or unique to the other developments we've done where we provide some separation, because look, we need to provide some for the community center and some in that area for the residents. But, you know, granted, they are a bit separated from the two buildings closest to the highway, but interconnected by the walk and it works for.
So those could be used
for residents.
The residential site improvement standards do factor in amenity parking as part of the number that they're requiring you to get to.
Yes.
As well as this.
Yep.
Maybe it's just me, but I feel like my head's spinning here. Right? You got RSIS, you got MLUL that I've grown up with, right? And I'm okay to change, but I feel like in the course of 5 minutes, somebody made a law that just got passed that nobody's read, right, and I'm not being snarky, but
and
all of a sudden we went from maybe you should bank some spots to never mind, don't bank them. Let's just, it's all coming out in the wash when you look at this new law. I think we need to look at the law to make sure.
Well, that's why Ms. Coffey has said take the conservative approach. They have a catch-all in their notice, any and all other variances that come up during the hearing. So Brett started out by saying they're proposing 287 parking spaces, 285 are required by RSIS. Now what they're saying is, because I haven't seen this law and you guys haven't seen the law, they believe that they're entitled to eliminate 20, but they're not going to rest on that. They're going to apply for relief to eliminate 20 spaces, to go from 287 to 267 spaces, because if they do that, they say that they're going to be able to decrease the height of the retaining wall and add separation between them, because they're going to take them off the northeastern side of the site.
Right, but our planner at least made a proposal to bank it. Now we're going from banking to eliminating.
But I don't think your number's right. I think it was 25 was what the waiver was for.
Let me.
But they agreed.
I'm sorry. I just feel like this is.
Let me see if I can sort of set the table and keep us all on track. So, sort of from the top, I'm going to start the ordinance, which would be where the MLUL ties in, Mr. Chairman, which is the touchstone, says that we shall comply with the residential site improvement standards. The residential site improvement standards number is 285.
Correct.
The applicant's plan shows 287, which is 2 over the minimum. In Mr. Barron's memorandum, he said the applicant should look to see whether it's possible to bank some spaces to create some more green space, possible recreation, room for the retaining wall, et cetera. At the same time.
So stop one second. Stop pausing. There.
So that's where I'm. Right. That's that, everything you said right. is where I've come in, at least from my my personal understanding.
Right. So stop right there. The applicant, before you even go on, the applicant is agreeable to that.
Correct.
I'm okay. still tracking.
Right.
Okay. Now is where we now, we kind of go.
Right. So the applicant is agreeable to Tom's suggestion. The applicant now has a proposal they want to float to the board.
So in while we're paused there, so what I would suggest is, again, if what's happening on the plan is acceptable to the board, my suggestion for how we handle it would be that we would say that the board would agree to permit the applicant to bank those spaces. And would agree to whatever relief is required pursuant to RSIS.
Okay, well, hold it. If they're just being banked, you don't need any relief.
Well, so it would permit us to bank them for now. Next step is we have this brand new law that's just been adopted for the electrical vehicle charging legislation. My understanding is that we are required to comply with it. So if we are lucky enough to be approved when we are back here for final, we would be talking about this anyway, but we have the benefit of some experience.
Right. Right, but that might be the best time to do it. If you come back for final, stick with Mr. Barron's suggestion to get through the preliminary, and then by the time you come back for final, assuming the board grants preliminary, I will have read it, and I will have told them about it, because this is going to apply to all applications, not just this application.
That's fine with the applicant, and if it's the preference of the board, it's fine to handle it in that manner.
Yeah, I don't want to make. I'm just trying to slow down and catch. I'm tracking all the way up to there. It's this new law that.
Well, we've only had 2 weeks to start to get our arms around it. So as far as I'm concerned, if that's everybody's preference, it's fine with the applicant, and we can hopefully all have the benefit of some time and experience, and then we can deal with the EV. But if to the extent that the board
is the board comfortable with that?
Yeah, it's fine. We mop things up at the final.
Just the banking of the 20 spaces for purposes of the application tonight, which is a preliminary application.
Right.
So then we're talking 267 spaces, and we're saying that that's adequate parking for the development.
And then the 20 spaces would be banked, meaning that if nothing else changed ever, and there were a demand for the parking in the future, the applicant would build those 20 spaces.
Technically, it's 267 paved spaces plus 20 banks, they are providing 287 spaces.
Okay,
right. And I would just add, if the board wants it, the applicant will also agree to a condition to comply with the electric vehicle charging law, and we can work out the details of what that means later, if that is helpful and appealing to the board.
You know, in effect.
In this particular case, I think it's better not to have the condition talk about the electrical charging law, because if it's the law, it's the law. You deal with it as final. Let's just leave it with the banking 20 spaces. That's my suggestion.
I think that makes sense.
May I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry if this is overcomplicating it, but what's the proposed number of ADA compliant spaces as proposed?
I think it was 7, right?
I think so. Hold on.
Assuming the 287.
Yeah.
Right.
So
seven is correct.
Mm-hmm. And what's that proposed modification? Should we interpret the new electric vehicle requirement?
Oh. If you're complying with the electric vehicle, I think.
I know that we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
Just a question.
That's a question to respond to at the time of final.
How many ADA compliant spaces? Yeah.
Okay. And this law is actually in effect now, you said, as of July.
You got to talk louder.
Yeah. So just to answer Ms. Johnson's question, just for the court reporter's sake, the law as it is currently written does not specify what the number of accessible spaces or adaptable spaces is required to be. And that's one of those details that hopefully will get worked out in the coming days. Ms. Butcher, I think you had a question for us also.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just wondering, the law is actually in effect as of the 9th. It's not as if it's slated to roll out.
It was signed into law, and I believe it was effective upon the governor signing it on July 9th.
And I can certainly see the value in that from a future standpoint. But I'm just also thinking about the fact that, like you said, there's a 55% set aside with 80 affordable housing. So there's a presumption attached to the demographic that's coming in that's actually going to be adopting electrical vehicle usage in the manner that's being proposed. So it's curious. But, yeah, I think Mr. Drill obviously said probably more additional detail around that will hopefully be coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I understand exactly what you're saying in the law. As it's currently adopted, makes no distinction between affordable and market units, which may be another detail that gets worked out in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask one more? Sure. So as I looked at the site plan, and maybe I'm wrong, a fair number of this parking spaces are pushed back behind, I think it was building 6 in that northeast corner. So, again, I think it's the same answer that Larry asked. I guess the expectation is residents will walk from there to their units if because in front of many of the buildings, there aren't even enough spaces for the number of units in the building or bedrooms, if my count was correct.
Right. They're going to have to be spread out beyond those spaces to be able to fill
So it's open parking, not assigned people.
That's correct.
And you have experience with that in your other communities, and that works.
There's always anomalies in trying to fit the additional parking in different notches, wedges, and certainly with this case, with this property, it's the same.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll just add, in fact, that the applicant has another community in Clinton Township, and spaces are not assigned there either.
Right. Good. They're close to the buildings there, but smaller site.
Mm-hmm. So, move on. John Parkin. From the layout standpoint, I've talked through circulation. Mm-hmm. I want to move on to grading, topography, and stormwater. You'll see how the site is configured. We just talked about the way that it extends, and you have the plugging out on the end in the easternmost point of the project. Where my tent is moving right now is the 150-foot buffer line to the wetlands, that has been established based on our wetland experts flagging the wetland line on the site.
And Mr. Scaffin, it's just for the record, that line is a sort of a dotted line, would you say?
It's a dash line on the project then or on the plan. The next feature that I will move my pen to is a dashed and dotted line that runs through the property. That is the 300-foot buffer line to the south branch. So we are outside all of the buffers established by DEP, as we feel will be established by DEP on this plan. What's also unique, though, in developing the layout and why we end up having walls predominantly along the majority of the northeast, along the southern faces, is because there's that drop-off in topography. Within this development, so from 31 to the back end of our site, the property drops off 55 feet in itself. And obviously, then from there down to the south branch, it drops off even more. That results in us having walls of variable height, and from 0 to 25 feet along the northern face, 0 to 32 feet on the southern end, and then it just varies between 25 and 32 feet on the eastern face. So that is one of the unique things about the property and how we've configured the development in order to work with those grades. From a stormwater management standpoint, new thing that we now have to contend with in the state are the new stormwater rules that were established back in early March. So this is one of our first plans being developed to adhere to those rules. So unlike developments of the past where you would see a site falling down to the east, you would see one large basin on the bottom, that's no longer feasible. We have to take our development area and break it up into maximum 2.5-acre chunks, basically. And so for every 2.5 acres, we need to provide a stormwater treatment area, and then from there, we can detain it and hold it, choke it back, per se, and then discharge it out at the controlled rates, which still remain the same as under the old rules. The biggest change is for water quality, and they have to split up the treatment into these smaller areas. So how are we doing that? We're doing that through a combination of above ground and porous pavement system. which is something also that is going to become more prevalent, I think, in development in the state. So we have areas, and it's not showing up, the pavement areas are not showing up too well on this plan, but if you go into our site plan sheet and you look, you'll see hatched areas within the parking lots. There's nine of them, and each one of those areas is essentially a porous pavement section that will have the pavement, stone beneath, and then a collection system below it to take that water and bring it as it needs to go, either to the open basins or discharging it out to the back of the site where water is currently flowing today. And then you have the four above-ground basins. You got one just to the north of the community center, one just to the east of the center and to the west of the first building, one to the, at the north end. The first building on the south end is got a basin, and then there's one between buildings, I'll call it two and three on the north side. So we have four above ground basins. And though that this would adhere to the new current rules. Those basins, the sand filters basins that are proposed, will be just that. There will be a basin we expect to be lined because of karst area, limestone area that's prevalent along this corridor. But that sand filter will then treat the water and be discharged out through a piping system to the collection system and then discharged at its controlled rate. I take a quick step back layout-wise. I missed that at the ends. We'll point, there's four of them. One at the end between buildings three and four here to the north, between one and two by the community center, and between the two buildings on the southern end, we have four trash enclosures being proposed as well, so well distributed throughout the site to accommodate each one of the buildings. Utility-wise, we've received bill service from electric and gas. We're working on sewer and water. We obviously recognize that we need to obtain water and sewer treatment and allocation from the town of Clinton, and we're working on that currently. As a result, once that has been obtained from a water and sewer standpoint, we would make the necessary applications to the DEP for treatment works application, as well as to the Bureau of Safe Drinking Water. For water, we do recognize for sewer also, we have to go to the Clinton Township Sewage Authority. Not to go back in history, but my first job out of college was working with Killam Associates. My first job was to inspect the sewer force main that went from the residences of
Water's Edge.
Yeah, Water's Edge, and ran down along here. So I know exactly where that force main is located. And that's how we would end up sewering this site. We would put a pump station. We show it on our plan right now about center of the property, which we would then pump sewer up to 31 to the south along 31 and likely make a connection right across Route 31, coordinating that with Clinton Township Sewage Authority, whether that be a brand-new connection to the force main. Hopefully that is the case, or extending it a little bit further down the down Halstead. Almost to where the library is where the actual discharge of that current force main is today. So that would take care of utilities. Lighting, we have decorative light fixtures. Again, if you're looking at Willows and at Annandale, similar type fixture, it's a decorative LED type fixture. We propose mostly single head fixtures throughout the site, with the exception of four double head fixtures located on the back end to be able to cover the center parking spaces in that configuration. Each one of those fixtures is 16 feet high, so they're not very tall. Landscaping wise, we are proposing 510 miscellaneous plantings. We've got 95 shade trees, 55 ornamental trees, 117 evergreen trees, and then the balance is a mix of evergreen and deciduous shrubs and ornamental grasses. And you can see in the plan, most of the deciduous trees are larger circles distributed within and around the buildings themselves, around the perimeter. We're providing the evergreen screening to the property's edges. We do propose one sign. So we have a monument sign located at the entry point just before the driveway. This is, if you again look at Willows and Annandale, it's the exact same sign, 24 square feet in size, meets the height requirement of 4 feet, and its setback is 12 feet, so it's fully compliant with your sign ordinance. I did mention the various agency approvals, DEP that we will need. We also currently have pending our soil erosion and sediment control application, as well as our county application, which we do expect a waiver from that for this plan.
You're dropping your voice.
Oh, sorry. So we are applying to the Soil Conservation District and to the county.
Can you confirm if that entrance lighting is illuminated and how so?
Can you repeat the question?
Can you confirm the entrance lighting, sorry, the entrance signage, is that illuminated?
Yes.
How so?
Yes, it will be backlit lit, similar to what we have out at the Willows of India.
How many?
Oh, no, actually, that's externally. It's externally illuminated.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Yes, it's ground mounted. Yeah, correct. It'll be externally illuminated.
Okay, thank you.
Brett, not to go backwards, but I have a paralegal looking at this EV requirements. And apparently, now I haven't seen this, okay? I'm trying to get it emailed to me, but apparently the law specifically states that no preliminary approval may be granted unless the EV requirements are met.
Oh.
So I believe that the board's going to have to impose a condition saying the applicant shall comply with the EV law requirements by revising the site plans. I think that will do it, and we don't have to mention anything about that, the right to eliminate up to 29 spaces. We'll stay silent about that. That's what they can deal with at final.
Mr. Drill, if I may, if I can ask that perhaps the condition also note that the board would grant such RSIS exceptions and relief from the underlying ordinance that loops in the RSIS requirements to the extent necessary. That would be helpful.
I think we're better off with the banking the 20 spaces.
Okay.
And complying with the EV law.
Perfect.
Just because.
Yep.
Apparently, this is a very complicated text.
Yes.
Also.
Yes.
So at some point, I know we'll be taking a break. I'm going to try to speed read through it, but I'm not going to trust myself on this one. I think I just want to keep it basic.
Mr. Drill, that's fine with the applicant. We're as I think we were in roughly the same place before, but the applicant is happy to say it will comply with the requirements.
Right, but now I think the board has to require it in order so we're not in violation of the law.
Okay. And the applicant will comply, and we will also bank the 20 spaces.
Great.
Sorry for the pause.
Yep. Thank you. When you said that, it...
Just educate me for a second, because I'm still... What's the time of application mean?
Okay. The time means the... Well, okay. The
I'm sorry. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I thought if you make the application and they change the law...
Right, but here's the thing. So the time of application law is in the MLUL. It's at NJSA 40:55D-10.5, okay? That says that at the time an application is filed, any ordinance which is in effect applies. It doesn't say any statute.
Ah.
Okay? So a statute, if the legislature, the New Jersey legislature, adopts a statute which changes things, the time of application law does not apply to that. It only applies to ordinances. That's the short answer.
Yep.
And, one other thing, if there's an ordinance change which is beneficial to the applicant, there's actually a case that says the applicant gets the benefit of that. It's only if there's an ordinance change that is
that's
detrimental to the applicant that it applies. It's the municipal stick-it-to-em law.
For what it's worth, Mr. Chairman, I have the exact same thought. we already applied.
Look, from the cannabis law to others, we do a pretty good job when we have it for 20 or 30 years in Clinton Township. I frankly don't need the state coming in and telling us whether it's where to put cannabis places or I just get a little bit.
Kevin, apparently they've come in
I'm not arguing with that. That's just.
Okay.
Yeah. Is this the first application for preliminary site plan approval?
It is. Yeah. It is for me in town. I can actually say with authority because I was with you all on the 12th,
right.
And that was the final site plan application, and I think we were the only ones on the agenda.
Right.
So in addition to getting to be the first application you're hearing live, we are also the first application.
I'll tell you something else. There's a difference. You see, that's apparently the law says for preliminary, because, see, once preliminary is granted, the MLUL gives you preliminary statutory protection rights.
Right.
If you have preliminary statutory protection rights, the legislature can't take that away from them. That's why on their final application.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
You could teach a case law on this one.
Now you're all ready to graduate from law school.
This will be a law school great law school examination question and a land use course. No question.
I think we're in a good place on it, though.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to hit two last quick.
Go ahead.
Very smart. See that? Change the topic. Good.
I have another exhibit, fire truck circulation plan. I'm going to mark it because it's the path has been colored.
Yep, so this is exhibit A2, and it's going to be a color rendered, what'd you say?
Rendered fire truck circulation plan.
Fire truck. Well, circulation plan dated
6/30/2021.
Okay.
And just making note that we did run the fire truck through. It's in our set. We used the township's truck, which we've had from previous applications, and we showed how the truck can fully circulate and run through. With RSIS, we need to provide either a bulb, like a cul-de-sac. If it's more than a 300-foot length from the end of the access point, the end of our site, but in this case, we have the circulation point around.
Okay, so what we're saying is, so you don't want, you need that area.
I do.
Okay.
I'm saying only that one row and leave the aisle.
Right.
So the next exhibit, which I, again, colorized so I can mark it as A4.
A3. Is a color rendered what?
This is the refuse truck circulation plan colorized with the date of 6/30/2021.
Okay, so this is color rendered refuge truck circulation plan?
Yes. So, refuse truck pulling in. Now, I noted where the trash enclosures will be. The truck in that case is pulling in and is going to be backing out. We really have no choice in being able to do that. We do have private hauler, so this is a private hauler situation, can be timed, obviously looking at it as off hours for as minimal impact as possible. So we have that situation and obviously show how it circulates through with relative ease. I think that is all I have for the that's all I have.
I think that's all we have while you're wearing your engineering hat.
Right.
But I'm going to ask you to, if you're ready, to switch to talk a little bit about the relief that the applicant is seeking from a planning perspective, and then we'll get into the memoranda that we received from the board's professionals, if that's acceptable.
That's fine. From a planning standpoint, we're looking at two items here. We'll start with the design waiver. We're going to need the design waiver with respect to not being able to meet the tree replacement requirement.
Okay, so it's an exception from the tree replacement ordinance.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, the question is as to the number and how much we're deviating. I reviewed the landscape memo and the number that was contained within that. It is a number that is obviously based on a 100 by 100 foot area in our survey within the most densely patched area of trees within this site. And as a result of that, it resulted in a very high number of tree replacement. Whereas if you look, and I go back to the first exhibit, which was the color aerial, our tree patch was essentially right here in the middle. But if you go to the front third or to the back third, you see the density lightens up a lot as compared to there. So the number is going to be less than what is noted in the Bozenberg memo. but it's still going to require us to have a request the design waiver because we're not meeting it with respect to the additional plans, the plans that we do have.
Making it cooler, what? Right?
Yeah.
Sorry, what design consideration is triggering that relief request?
Which?
So
can you do that again a bit louder?
I'm sorry, I was asking what design conditions are triggering that relief waiver request?
It's the nature of the site itself. It's the fact that we're dealing with a fairly undeveloped lot, the majority of the lot, with the exception of that front patch where the veterinary office is. And we're just looking at strict adherence of your ordinance and your code as to the number of trees. Now, we didn't do a full tree survey of documenting every single one. That would give us our most accurate number as to what the tree replacement would be. So what we typically do in those situations is we take that 100-by-100 patch, and then we try and interpolate using that number, and it's come up based on the overall site disturbance what our number should be. Well, as I mentioned before, we sort of shot ourselves in the foot by using that 100-by-100 in the most dense area. So we would ask for the design waiver outside of the site. There are some smaller areas where we can look to putting some additional plantings, but it's almost only in this patch on the eastern end of the site. Anywhere else is encumbered by steep slopes or discharge for drainage, and there's just no other feasible way to place the trees on site. We have a large patch within here, but it's all the existing wooded area associated with the wetlands and the stream corridor buffer. So we have no other route to go.
And Mr. Skaffnitz, you did just touch on this, but just to emphasize it a little bit, the figure that was in some of the review memos was assuming the removal of trees throughout the site, and we are preserving everything within in the greens towards the southeast portion.
It was assuming removing trees within the disturbed area. Okay. We looked at the calculation, and we understood where the number came from. So it wasn't counting the area that is undisturbed, which would be the wetlands, and even the patch that's located off in the southern front end of the site.
Is the waiver being triggered because of lack of available space to replant?
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
I think also, Mike, I took a site visit out there, and there's quite a bit of ash trees out there, and quite a few of them are already dead and declining. So that also probably should be taken into consideration as well. So obviously that tree count would come down more so than what's interpreted as well. So
what we would look to do is we would look to finalize what the final number is with Jim, and to go through come up with what would is the appropriate right calculation using these other areas. And obviously too, in looking through his memo, and understanding what we're doing with adding in some additional green space where we could plant some additional trees on site, as well as addressing some other comments in your planner's letter for buffering and screening, we will look to add some additional trees into the plan.
I'm just trying to figure out how do you know you need an exception,
but
we don't know the extent of the exception.
Yeah. If I may, Mr. Drill, Mr. Mizuko's memorandum, if we were to comply with the ordinance based upon the area of disturbance, the applicant would be required to plant, I think it's 8,700 trees. And we know that we will never get close to 8,700 trees on the site. It's just not possible, and that number is triggered by how densely forested so much of the site is now.
You're suggesting at least for purposes of the requirement, we could rely on the board's expert's memo for the number required. Okay, that's a start. So
I think if you want to get a little bit more accurate, I think Mr. Keller mentioned in his review letter possibly using 50 by 50.
No, I understand, but I'm saying we're here tonight.
Right.
Okay? They need an exception tonight.
Okay.
So I think I like the idea of using your number for the requirement for tonight, but there's still a missing piece.
So,
and the missing piece is, what's the extent of the exception?
So what's currently being proposed by the applicant and shown on the plan is 277 trees. And then I think additionally the applicant is willing to accept a condition that it coordinate further with the board's professionals to identify locations where trees in addition to that 277 could be included within the site plan.
You're saying there would relief would be granted. It wouldn't say exactly what the relief would be, but there'd be a condition that they shall replant additional trees to the satisfaction of the board's landscape architectural expert, and then if you have a disagreement, you come back to the board like with any other condition.
I think that's right.
Okay, so first of all, is the board's landscape architect comfortable with that?
Yes, I am.
And then the second, is the board comfortable with delegating that to the board landscape architect?
I would say yes, and the condition's out with the EV law. There's some things that could come out of that interpretation that might change that distribution of trees required, so I'd be okay with it on my end, so long as it satisfies the new ordinance with EV.
Okay. Anybody have any concern with sort of doing that delegate to to the art professional? If they can't come to agreement or they disagree, they come back here.
Yeah.
And you've already got some ideas on ash trees and just trying to understand the
disturbances.
And the buffering along 31 and the perimeters will be robust, I think is what this says.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did have some comments about the retaining wall heights and buffering those.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, that's
maybe.
Right.
So that's, but this would give you latitude to maybe put some of those trees back there to resolve that comment.
Between 8,000 and 277 is a big
yeah. Well, 8,000 is a big number.
That's why we know we're not going to not going to get there.
I mean, the yardstick is clearly impracticable, right? You're not going to even get half that. So it's kind of
Right.
Relying on our landscape expert and knowing that the general concepts of trying to buffer things, I think you guys can get to a solve. As long as we think they're okay.
Okay, so that was good. Point of relief number one. Right. Mr. Stappen, if I can ask you to address point of relief number two, which is the variance related to the retaining wall heights, please.
Yeah, and so the retaining wall height in this case, anything over 6 feet needs to be tiered, and we need to have a 6 foot gap between that tier. If we're looking at the back wall, we'd be looking at about 4 tiers to 5 tiers at a minimum, which would separate the wall out another 25 feet out from its end, and obviously then start to encroach within the buffers that are established by the DEP for the wetlands in that north easterly and southeasterly corner for the most part. And even so, to the north, it would extend then that wall probably out beyond the northerly property line. So by reasons of the exceptional shape of the property, obviously the topography of the property, which is generating this need, which would be C1 hardship, we'd be requesting the variance for that wall. But I do want to make note that we, with the comment on buffering, we do see that there are means in, for example, the wall that is on the easterly face, which is the predominant face towards residences, right. Which is also the area we're getting rid of the 20 parking, banking the 20 parking spaces. Yeah. We also have along the back side of those spaces, we show a sidewalk. Well, we remove the sidewalk, which we don't need there. We can then plant on top in that area to provide screening on top of the wall. Mm-hmm. And we do have the means for a portion of this face of the wall to be able to bring a tier outward, one tier, which we could then plant along the top upper edge of that wall. Mm-hmm. From a perspective of the neighbors across the south branch and where they're located, they are not as high as our development.
Right.
They're first floors. They're a bit lower. Mm-hmm. And then between us and them, on both sides of the river, is a large swath of mature trees. Yeah. So the buffer here, in my opinion, really doesn't need to be low or on the lower end of the wall. It's really dealing with the upper end of the wall. And then through the couple changes I just described, we can achieve some additional buffering along there, which addresses the comments at the same time of your professionals.
So from their backyards, they're not looking up to a huge expanse of like 32-foot high wall by God knows how many hundreds of feet.
And the distance between there is
right. It's fairly the rest
several hundred feet. It's like 600 to 700 feet at a minimum to the first property.
Now you mentioned before, and again, now I'm going back to you mentioned before. Well, if this new law eliminated 20 spots.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just following that because I just feel like we're running before we're walking there, at least for me. Maybe you can do some tiering or make something.
I would agree with you, and that comes at time of final. We get clarification of that if that's the case.
We can save that
because I'm just a land use attorney, okay? But he showed the fire trucks regulation plan. If they get rid of those spaces. 29 spaces? I don't think.
Well, you'd still have the road loop back there. You just wouldn't have the spaces
right.
To the east of
it. All we're talking about, John, is the spaces. So we don't get rid of the drive aisle. So okay. The truck still circulates.
Okay.
It's really just,
So if you truly don't need, now I'm starting to run, but now if you truly don't need the 20 spots, you can get rid of that row, you can fix some things, but I just feel like
that's what we can do.
But
so for purposes of
tonight,
keeping us all on the straight and narrow, so what the applicant is asking for this evening is a variance with respect to the height of the retaining walls, but I think what Mr. Skavinitz is saying, that once we all have our arms a little bit better around the new electric vehicle charging law, if we are able to eliminate the back row of parking spaces, keeping the drive aisle, that would enable the applicant more space to tier that wall and to add landscaping, which the applicant would intend to do. So we may be able to further soften the impact of the retaining wall. But as it is, the applicant is seeking a variance for the height of the retaining wall. And not to put words in your mouth, Mr. Skavinitz, I think your testimony was that the impact of that retaining wall with respect to the neighbors to the rear of the development is mitigated by the 600 to 700 feet of existing mature vegetation, as well as just the distance, correct?
That's correct.
How about this? If the board wanted to impose the following condition, what would the applicant say? Condition would be something to the effect that if the applicant can eliminate parking spaces at the time of final site plan review and approval, they will be required to reduce the retaining wall deviation.
That would be acceptable to the applicant, and it's exactly what we're trying to say. So thank you.
It's not eliminate the deviation, it's to reduce.
Correct. It will soften it give us some room to do that tiering and the landscaping.
Not that there's anything against the applicant, but I just don't want to leave it up to the good graces of the applicant. I want to.
It's exactly what we were trying to say, and we're happy to comply with that kind of condition. Okay. I think that where the applicant would be heading next is to address the professional memoranda, if that's acceptable. So I think, Mr. Skavinitz, we'll start with the engineer.
Uh-oh. This is what Denise just told us.
Someone sulfur.
They have found out what causes this. It's primarily these microphones, primarily. If someone touches one, it's like sets off a vibration, and the vibration continues, and then kind of, it's like a snowball going down a hill. So, right. Okay. This one apparently is the worst of them all. You have the second worst.
Maybe I should take. I'll look at a hold and take away that handheld.
Yeah.
Turn that off.
Once it starts up, it's hard to play it. Well, that's probably the side that. Don't touch it.
Okay, government procurement.
They had to jinx it.
Okay.
Yeah, let's keep on rolling.
We're working off of the engineering review memorandum that we received. It's from Mott McDonald. It is dated July 20th, 2021. There are a couple of comments that the applicant wanted to touch on. Other than the comments that we are speaking to, the applicant will comply with all of the comments in the memorandum. Just a note, there's comment C as in cat, 1, B as in boy, 4. So C as in cat.
Yep. C, 1.
B as in boy.
B.
4.
Bingo.
Yep. Our traffic engineer will be coming up to discuss, so just hold on that one.
Yep.
Then the next comment is C as in cat, 1. C as in cat, 7.
Okay.
Mr. Skapinitz, this is a question regarding the location of the tot lot and asking whether it can be relocated. Could you touch on that, please?
Right. I don't think that's not.
No.
This no?
Proposed patio with the pergola on the north side of the community building appears to conflict with the grading for the proposed stormwater BMP filter basin 1.
Well, I apologize. But let's talk about that. So the proposed patio with pergola and dealing with the conflict between that and the basin, please.
Yeah, I think the pergola is going on the north side of the community building, and I think the grading was right for the building.
Yeah, well, we're two things in that area, so there will be adjustments to the grades. We'll shift the pergola a bit and modify the grades there to accommodate that. We're also going to modify some grades by the basin. There was a comment about whether that basin is within the 10-foot setback to the side. We're right at about 10 feet, but we'll give it a couple foot buffer and modify the grading for that basin. That will eliminate actually one of the.
Well, put it this way, though. The short version is you'll comply.
We'll comply.
Right.
Right.
We'll
so
comply.
My suggestion is if you can comply, you don't have to say anything.
Okay.
If you don't comply, or if you don't want to comply, or if you have trouble complying, that's the ones you should talk about.
Okay. And then the only other. When we were going to talk about, which I think may also be a comply for you, Mr. Drill, it was C as in cat, 1, C as in cat, 8. This was regarding a discrepancy on the plans, Mr. Skapinitz, and if you can just confirm that sand filters with under drains are going to be used, correct?
That's correct, yes. We'll address that.
So really it's C1B4 that you want to talk about.
We're going to talk about that with our traffic engineer.
Okay.
Okay. Then the next memorandum we wanted to touch on is the board planner's memorandum. This memorandum is from Burgess Associates, and it's dated July 21st, 2021.
So the same thing applies to this. If you can comply with the comments, you don't have to say anything because I'm going to make it a condition.
Sure.
If you can't comply or you don't want to comply or there's a problem complying, then tell the board about it so they can decide what to do with it.
Okay. Just for the sake of keeping it organized, I'm just going to note comment number 5 was where the bank parking suggestion came in, and we had quite a lot of discussion about that.
Yep.
Let's see. Then comment number 6. Just as a clarification, and we will comply, Mr. Skapinitz, the sidewalk is on the subject property, correct?
That is correct.
This was not the prolongation. This was more of a discussion item. So the required sidewalk they have proposed within their property, and the question was whether or not it should be in the right-of-way, as it will ultimately connect with an elongated public sidewalk along Route 51.
Right.
And if it's on their site, they would have to allow for public access, I believe. Right?
Thank you.
Well, or the condition can be that they have to give the township an easement.
Right.
Well, that's what I mean. Would it be simpler just to have it in the right of way or on their side?
That's a question. That's
doesn't matter to me.
Put it this way. Right. The way I would suggest you go about it is from an engineering standpoint, from a traffic engineering standpoint, what's best, what's safest, what's the best way to do it? And by the way, I just wanted to note that, Larry, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not simply the board's engineering expert. You're the board's traffic engineering expert also.
If the applicant's willing to grant an easement, obviously the further away from the travel way, the safer it is.
And the applicant is.
Okay.
And there's one less permit you have to get through DOT.
Yep. Right. Yep. We're happy to do it.
So the board's fine with that. The applicant will grant an easement, okay, and our own, the board's own traffic engineering expert says the best thing to do would be to have it on their property with the easement.
When we engineer the remaining sidewalk, we just make it connect properly. Just deal with that.
Right.
Comment number 7 was, I think, another discussion item, but it was about tree removal, so I think we've covered that one at this point.
Yeah, we beat that one.
That horse is dead.
Yeah. Right. okay, then comment number 8 is our tot lot that I got my wires crossed. So comment number 8 was asking whether it was concerned that given the current location of a tot light, a variance may be required, and take it from there, Mr. Skapka.
Right. We'll relocate the tot lot. Our plan is to take it from the front of the building, and we will look at areas towards the back. There's a notch, predominantly in the south, in the eastern part of the property, but towards the middle, that we might be able to relocate that to, and obviously far off the road.
Okay, so the applicant agrees to a condition saying relocate the tot lot to comply with all setback requirements.
Yes.
Yes. And just for the record, for folks who may not be able to see this, it would be kind of diagonal between what's the building on the lower side and the upper side where that notch is, just so the people...
Yeah, can you point that out? Good point.
Building to the east of building number 4.
Thank you.
And the tot lot has a fence around it, though, correct? Because even if you relocate to the back, you'd hear a 30-foot-high retaining wall.
Well, we would adjust the retaining wall to accommodate the tot lot in that area.
Mm-hmm. But... also,
it will be fenced.
Yes, of course. Yes. Can we also make one more comment? This time, with the tot lot, be really careful with the retaining wall and the limestone. You don't want a sinkhole forming in that area. And so, please, I mean, that's
a good point.
Mm. Yep. Look closely where you put that thing and make sure you're studying it.
Thank you.
That's good.
I think comment number 9 was another discussion point that's already been covered. That was regarding the number of stormwater basins and also buffering and landscaping. So I think we've discussed that one.
Yeah.
Then comment number 10, Mr. Skapanen's, all of the lights will have cutoffs and will comply with the ordinance requirements, correct?
Yes.
Comment number 12, the trash enclosure will be consistent with principal buildings, correct?
Yeah, the exterior will be designed to match the buildings.
And then the last point in here that I wanted to touch on with you, in the section of the memorandum that's entitled Required Variance Relief, number 2 questions whether a setback may be required for one of the basins.
Right. We'll make an adjustment to make sure that it is outside the setback.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I just ask, on back to the signage, it's the same sign as the other, so the size, is the lighting acceptable per hour? I think I heard it was uplighted or something.
Uplighting is, yeah.
If that's consistent with our lighting, then it's what it
is. My understanding is that it is.
That's what we did with the other one.
We accepted part of the rules today.
If that's what it was for the other,
we accepted it.
Okay. Thank you.
So maybe the perfect segue is to go to the lighting memo from McDonald.
Can I ask one minor question? There's some reference in here about a gazebo. But is there one on the site? I couldn't find it on the site plan.
There was one in the concept plan, so maybe I have that in my brain.
Is there a gazebo?
There is not one.
We had one to the north of the building. That's why I was saying it was on the north side, but it's not shown in my rendering. So I
think the architectural plan submitted had pergolas.
Right.
The pergola off the back of the
two areas had pergolas or patios, but
like
I don't
on the side. Oh, that's what I saw too. Okay, it's fine. I looked around. I couldn't find it.
Pergola is not gazebo. Okay.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
I apologize for the
And as far as the lighting, the review letter from our office there, we asked for some additional information just to prove that the externally lit sign meets the requirements of the code.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
And we would agree.
So I assume you're going to agree to the 3 comments as conditions in the lighting memo, yes?
We do. We wanted to respond to comment 1.4, which is asking for the hours of operation of the lights. Mr. Skapanen, the lights will be on from dusk until dawn, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. That's the lighting memo. Next, we had planned to go to the environmental review that we received from Habitat by Design. As I said, this is a memorandum by Habitat by Design, which is dated July 20th, 2021. Comments 1 and 2 deal with the tree removal, which I think we've already covered. And comment number 3 recommends adding a topsoil layer and turf grass within the detention basin, and the applicant will comply with that comment, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, that was the environmental memo. Then next we were going to go to the geotechnical report that we received. So this memorandum is from M2 Associates, Inc., and it's dated July 20th, 2021. The first comment is regarding water, which Mr. Scappin has already talked about. And then the next comments are regarding submission of checklists 1 and 2 regarding the geological conditions of the property, which the applicant will provide as part of its final site plan application. And the memorandum also suggests a condition of approval if the board were inclined to approve the application, regarding additional study and monitoring that the applicant would comply with, and the applicant will comply with it, assuming it's acceptable to the board, we're happy to comply with that condition as well.
So you're going to comply with everything in the memo?
We're complying with everything in the memo.
Basically, that condition is the same one we've applied
right.
on other sites that are similar to this. Mm-hmm. I actually think Ms. Coffey's familiar with the other site that we did. They're the same condition.
Mm-hmm. I think it worked well in terms of allowing for time to study and really understand the conditions. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it. Thank you. Landscaping is next. So this is a memorandum dated July 20th, 2021 from Bosenberg Landscape Associates. I think that all of these are items that the applicant will comply with. We did want to touch on comment number 15, though. So comment 15 is suggesting plantings along the southeastern portion of the property that faces the residences along Riverbend Road. Can you talk about that, please, Mr. Scappanis?
Yeah, that was my testimony earlier about talking about the wall, where the 20 row of 20 spaces are, getting some trees on top there, and also dealing with adding a tier at that face of the wall to add some additional trees in a tier as well on the upper portion of the wall. So that's where we would look to try and address that comment.
But, and I guess just for the sake of making the record clear, though, if we are not able to eliminate that row of spaces in tier, then we would not be able to accommodate the additional row of or the additional planting, correct?
No, that's not necessarily true, because I have the sidewalk that's in front of those spaces, which we would look to remove. So within the 6 feet or so that we have between there and the wall, we would look to gain and add some additional plantings.
So if you can eliminate them, you'd have more plantings, but if you can't eliminate them, you'll have some additional plantings,
yes.
Not as many.
That is correct.
But none below the wall. So the comment also talked about whether or not we had any evergreen plantings, which we don't know, between that and the rear of the residences on the other side, and whether or not we would have some winter coverage as well.
So. Right, and that's where I'm describing at the top, and in a tier, mm-hmm. the first tier down from the top of that wall, that we would create one tier where we would add that landscaping, which is really where we feel we're going to provide the most benefit, because mm-hmm. on the lower half of the wall, that's not a portion of the wall that really is going to be seen. Given the amount of vegetation and the distance between those residents in here, that's not something I think that is really a key focal point, like focal point to have to buffer, because it's going to be buffered by the natural vegetation itself.
Yeah, I guess my concern is if we aren't able to tier it and it's a 32-foot wall,
right.
what is it going to look like to the neighbors to that side?
Right. My point is, though, is we look to get one tier on that face,
okay,
to be able to provide one for there plus the trees on top.
Okay.
Just a question, and there's no concern for planting and a tiered wall with the geofabrics and structural integrity of the wall with the root system?
It's part of the design with the walls. We've done those design with those wall systems where we've had the tier, had them planted. It's
going to be designed to for the any kind of roots that might be growing that push against the wall, the
correct
pressure.
Correct. That is accommodated for with the geogrid design.
Another question. I know it hasn't been designed yet, but I guess the thing we'd also want to see in the final would be obviously those materials. So, you know, what type of wall are we?
Yes, that was one of your comments on page 3. And yes, we'll provide details. We're looking at an earth tone, something that's going to blend in with the natural scenery that's there.
Okay.
And with the top lot moving, we'd allow a little more buffering along Route 31.
We would be able to provide some additional vegetation in that location.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Mizuko, I was going to go to comment number 17, which was about the retaining wall color and material. So we already covered that one, so thank you. And then the last comment was 22, which was about the tot lot relocation again. So we've covered that. The last memorandum that I was going to have Mr. Skapanitz touch on is the fire report. Bear with me. This is a report from the Township of Clinton Bureau of Fire Safety. It's dated July 19th, 2021. The applicant will comply with all comments. There was one question in comment number 2, which is asking whether the community building is going to be sprinklered.
Yes, it will be.
And it will be a 13D system, correct?
That's correct.
It will be a what?
13D as in dog.
Okay.
Those were all of my questions for Mr. Skapanitz.
Does anybody on the board have any questions for Mr. Skapanitz? How about any of the professionals? And I don't know, I'll ask if there's anybody from the public. Go ahead.
Not my report, but did we ever touch on the Clark Kane Hintz report?
No, they're going to do their
architect. It's coming.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. This might be one minor question. Curbing throughout the community is concrete or Belgian block? Curbing?
Concrete.
Concrete, okay. You were asking about...
I was asking if anybody from the public is here, or anybody has any questions for this
witness. Can you... Come on up. Let's get in the handheld mic. So any members of the public?
That's right. No one's going to sit next to me.
And then identify yourself for the record.
Bill Kibler, KIBLER. I'm with Raritan Headwaters Associates.
And what's your address?
Good Lord, what's our address? 2121 Larger Cross Road in Bedminster. Haven't been in the office in a little while.
And you're with who?
Raritan Headwaters Association.
And I'm sorry, what was the address?
2121 Larger Cross Road, Bedminster.
Okay, so this is questions at this point, and you can make sworn comments later.
Got it. Now, I just had a question in your engineering capacity, sir, if you don't mind. Can you explain to me which way the slope on this property runs?
And what exhibit? Hold it.
Where are you looking?
Exhibit number.
Exhibit A1.
Okay.
It's running from 31, and it's running predominantly down to the south.
Do you know what the natural slopes on that property are?
It's very variable.
Where they?
There's a strip rated about this location where it runs at about 25%.
Okay.
But then everything outside of it is less than that 25%.
Okay.
And it's a variable.
All right, so my question actually is, I think, pretty straightforward. I was just, can you show me one more time where the stormwater retention or where the stormwater basins are?
Right, we have four above ground basins, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So the question that came to me as you were showing us that earlier is I was just curious why the stormwater basins appear to all be on the upslope part of the property.
Good question. There's, there are, it, again, it's because it's to utilize, those are areas of green space. So the areas of green space that we have, we're taking full advantage of to be able to put those basins. So that's why we have a mix of these sand filters, which are providing water quality, plus the areas on our plan, which is not very clear here, but I know there's a patch right here to the east of building number 6, and there's a couple other parking areas within the parking field that have the pervious pavement that is providing our means of water quality. So between the those 9 areas of paving and these 4 above ground basins, that's how we're meeting our requirement with respect to water quality as well as the detention of the water. Now recognize too, while it's dropping in this direction, we're making up about 25 to 30 feet here that we're pushing up. So this site becomes a lot flatter, which enables us to be able to move water to the various basins as we show them on this plan, and then to be able to discharge it out back towards the stream.
And then where do the stormwater basins discharge to? You were describing that earlier, but I couldn't see it.
Discharge point here, and then there's the final discharge point is somewhere. It's here.
Mr. Stavins, can you just describe where the heres are?
Yep.
Right, not only describe that. Can you describe them, but can you actually mark them since that's an exhibit?
I am. I'm circling them. So
right, but slow down. When you mark them, could you put a little note saying discharge point? And then you can describe, for example, that would seem to me to be on the southerly side of the site. I'm going to call that either a pedal wrench or like a shark-shaped property. And where you're describing this discharge point, it's the southerly side before the property, let's say, takes a turn down to the south, correct?
That's correct, and to the east of building number 4.
Okay, and so mark in red, discharge point.
I wrote that there, yes.
Okay, and then where's the second discharge point?
The second part will be on the far eastern part of the site to the east of building 6, located between the retaining wall and the easternmost property line.
And can you mark discharge point on that also?
It's on there already.
Okay.
And those are both outside the 300-foot C1 buffer. Okay, I thought so from where you showed me. Those are all the questions.
Can I ask a follow-up question? If the new stormwater regs didn't apply, what would you be proposing instead of these multiple basins?
Underground system. It would be an underground stormwater basin, so your typical line of pipes all underneath the parking lot. And then you'd have your jellyfish filter, your contact filter, that mechanical device to provide your water quality treatment. So basically DEP has outlawed those completely.
So that it's the new regs that have resulted in, very interesting, okay.
It's green they want green infrastructure requirements.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Which is one of my comments about making a deed restriction on the pervious pavement so that long-term maintenance can be ensured.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for those questions.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think just to close the loop, I think that was lumped in with the will comply. Record, the applicant will comply with that recommendation for the deed restriction.
Kevin, I think there's some more people in the public.
There are, as long as if they want to speak now to this witness, and if not, they could speak later.
They can speak generally.
Right.
Right now, if you don't ask questions of this witness now, you're not going to be able to ask questions of this witness later. So if any member of the public have any questions for this witness, now's the time.
Right.
No?
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stavins. Our next witness is Ms. Johannesson. Okay, can you please introduce yourself to the board and the public and tell them about your experience and credentials?
Yes. My name is Mary Johannesson, Johannesen.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first, you got to speak up.
I'll take a page out of your book.
What?
My name is Mary Johannesson, Johannesen. I'm a principal with Kitchen and Associates Services, Inc. Our offices are located at 756 Haddon Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. I'm a New Jersey licensed architect in good standing. I have been licensed since 1992. My Bachelor's of Architecture was obtained from Virginia Tech. I've been employed at Kitchen and Associates for 27 years. I have provided professional testimony in many different municipalities in New Jersey, however, not in Clinton.
It's your lucky night.
I'm pleased to be here.
So we would ask that Ms. Johansson be accepted as an expert in architecture, please.
I have no concerns. Does anyone on the board or no, we accept.
Thank you. Ms. Johansson, can you please walk the board through the proposed elevations and renderings of the buildings?
Certainly. There are two new exhibits. They are significantly similar to the exhibits 8, drawing 811 and 812 that were submitted. However, we've added color and materials to them.
Okay, so our last exhibit was, what's on?
You're on A3.
Was A3, so we're on A4. So which, you pick what you want as A4 and pick what you want as A5. And then after you mark them, please describe A4 for us and describe A5. And the description will start out with color rendered, and then you'll fill in the blanks.
Exhibit A4 is sheet A11. Dated 7/26/2021. It is the prospective building type A, and it is the color rendering.
Okay, color rendered sheet A11, dated 7/26/21. That's going to be A4. And what's going to be A5?
A5 will be sheet A12, dated 7/26/2021. It is the prospective of the clubhouse. And it is a color rendering.
A color rendered sheet A12, dated 7/26/21. Okay.
On exhibit A4, this is a typical residential building. We have 6 residential buildings on the property. They are each 3 stories in height. They contain between 24 and 25 units each. This is representing building A, of which we have 2. This is a little bit unique. These 2 buildings do have the 25th unit, which is a townhouse at the end, which is a 2-story element on the 3-story building. The buildings are all very similar, with 12 units access off of each of the front entrances. So the entrances to the building face the parking for convenience. There are 4 apartments per floor accessing that stair. So there's a controlled entrance, as you see depicted, with the small metal, red metal roof and the columns at these 2 locations. And that is typical for all the buildings. This being the building with the townhouse on the end, there is a first floor entrance to this unit, which is a private entrance. Talk a little bit more about the units. There are a total of 146 units. 52 are 1-bedroom, 70 are 2-bedroom, 24 are 3-bedroom. Of the 146 units, 80 are UHAC. Compliant in accordance with the ordinance.
Okay, so the 80 UHAC compliant are the 80 affordable housing units, correct?
That is correct. The requirements are that there's a maximum of 20% 1-bedroom units, which is 16. We are providing 16. There's a minimum 30% 2-bedroom units, which would equate to 24. We are providing 40. There's a minimum of 25% 3-bedroom units, which equates to 20, we are providing 24.
The affordable units and the market rate units, what's the mix? Do you have a building with all the affordables, or do you have the affordable units integrated into?
They're integrated throughout.
Excellent. And the reason I ask that is because Adam Gordon, just for the record, called me today to ask me to ask that question. And he's going to be very happy with the answer.
We aim to please.
Yep.
little bit more about the units. They're all one-story flats, and they're stacked so that there are stairs accessing them, no elevators. They're one, two, and three-bedroom market rate, affordable, and one- and two-bedroom market rate units. And they're all designed the same. They have an open floor plan, very contemporary living, where the kitchen, living, dining is one large room so that the natural light comes in, and residents can choose where they put their furniture. Each unit has individual heating and air conditioning throughout. Each apartment has hot water, individual hot water, and there's a washer and dryer in each apartment. All the residential buildings will be sprinklered throughout with an approved NFPA system. Exhibit A5 is the color rendering showing the clubhouse or community building as it has been referred to. This is a one-story building, and it's located at the entrance to the site on the western end closest to Route 31. It is designed for maintenance and management space, offices for resident services, and other amenities for the residents who reside here. So all the residents, regardless of which apartment you live in, has access to the amenities at the clubhouse, which include a fitness room. This is one of those areas that had an adjoining outdoor patio that had the pergola covering it for a little bit of shade. There's a lounge seating area inside. There's a community room, which is just a multi-purpose room that has a small kitchenette in it. There's an interior game room, men and women's rooms, and then the offices. On the outdoor space, we also have, a front covered porch facing the parking. We have a rear covered patio, which is directly accessed from the community room, which also has a pergola over it. And then we have a roofed over rear porch, all outdoor spaces for the residents to enjoy. I'd like to talk a little bit about the exterior design of the buildings. As you can see in A4 and A5, the buildings resemble one another, the three-story and the one-story. We designed these with a rural agricultural feeling so that they would fit as though they belong in the community. They look a little bit like a larger barn and a small barn. I've had people comment on it. On A4, the residential building, you'll see that we've used a gambrel roof design, which is very common to barn-style architecture, as well as some other shed roofs. So it's almost as though the building grew over time, which is a very natural aesthetic for life on a farm, for rural architecture.
It looks great.
The roof lines step up and down as the facades also step in and out to provide some visual interest and allow us to have termination points for the various types of siding that we're using. You'll notice that around the base of both buildings, the residential style building as well as clubhouse, there's brick that goes up to the water table, and it also extends higher in some areas. We've used a combination of different types of cement siding. Cement siding is a very durable product that will last significantly longer than aluminum or vinyl. We have horizontal cement board siding. We also have vertical cement board siding. And then here you see the extent of the stone veneer that steps up and down and in and out on the building facades. The stone is continuous around all sides, as are the different types of cement board siding. So what you see on the front is pretty much what you will see on the back. The only difference is we have the building entrances on the fronts of the building. The balance of the materials, the trim, the columns will all be a synthetic, low-maintenance product that, unlike wood, will not rot. The roofing, the majority of the roofs is an asphalt shingle, a 30-grade architectural shingle, as well as we've got some accents over the entrances to the building. The residents and let's see here, but there's also a bit of metal roof over the front porch.
A quick question. Is there a note somewhere on either of those exhibits or in the architectural plans that say that that's going to be that the siding is going to be, you know, the
cement
board?
Yes. On the architectural building elevations that were submitted with the application.
Yeah, can you just direct me to where?
Yes.
Well, it's either going to be on A10, the elevations, either on the elevations, okay.
Should we mark this exhibit?
No, you don't have to.
It's okay.
Just tell us what page you're looking at.
What's the A number?
A3, building elevation. This is building type A.
Yep.
You will notice on elevation 1, building type A, front elevation, the notes that call out all the typical materials on the left-hand side.
All right, great. This is vertical fiber cement siding. I just wanted to make sure I saw the note. Okay.
Also, on the color renderings, on the bottom is the color palette that calls out the color of the asphalt shingles, the color of the metal roofing, the color of the vertical, James Hardy vertical siding, as well as the stone. And that is also on Exhibit A4.
Okay, because if assuming the board approves this, they always impose a condition, something to the effect that the buildings as constructed shall be substantially similar to that reflected on exhibits A4 and A5 and to that reflected in the architectural drawings. That would pick up the colors if the board likes it, the material type, and make sure that, not that the applicant would do this, but that there's no switcherooski, you know, with the fiber to vinyl.
The applicant expects to comply with that requirement, okay, and is happy to do so.
And the colors of the material are actually taken from the color palette by the different manufacturers who are stating on.
All right, great.
Okay. So I think now, unless there are questions before we get there, we return to the board's architect's memorandum.
Can I just ask one question? Both sides, we'll call it the front and rear of the building, are treated similarly.
All four sides of all the buildings are treated similarly with a consistent color palette and materials.
Thank you. You did a great job, by the way. I think you all of you.
So this memorandum is dated July 15th, 2021. It's received from Clark Caton Hintz. All of the comments are comments that the applicant is complying with. Comment 7 is inquiring about what sort of green building practices are being incorporated into the proposal.
The buildings will be Energy Star certified version 3.1, the residential buildings, to be clear. And also, energy benchmarking will be performed on the residential buildings, which will essentially measure the energy performance of what is actually constructed.
As built, ongoing?
I'm not sure for the duration.
Okay, we didn't hear. Say that again.
As built and ongoing. As built.
Across
so it measures the performance based on the utility bills that the tenants get, so the data is collected. It is ongoing.
Is this a voluntary measure, or is it part of the state financing?
It is
my understanding, Mr. Behrens, is that it it enhances the credits that are assigned to the proposal, that makes it more competitive for tax credit.
I'm just curious.
Yes. Yeah. So it helps the project be in a better position to qualify for tax credits is the answer,
thanks,
which essentially makes it mandatory. Yes. So back to the green features.
Certainly. Some of the Energy Star features will be Energy Star labeled kitchen appliances, the refrigerators and dishwashers in the apartments, the washers and dryers in the apartments, as well as Energy Star labeled windows throughout. In addition to Energy Star, there are other sustainable features that my client builds into their projects pretty much as their threshold. WaterSense plumbing fixtures at all toilets, kitchen, shower, and bathroom faucets. We will be specifying tankless hot water heaters in the apartments, programmable thermostats. The flooring in the units and common areas will be very durable, so they will not need to be replaced with every resident turnover. So it mitigates the amount of waste put into the landfills. The interior paints, sealants, and adhesives will have low or no VOCs. Cabinets and countertops will have no formaldehyde. There will be LED lighting throughout all the residential areas and clubhouse. The common areas in the clubhouse will have occupancy sensors on the lighting. And as I mentioned, the cement fiber siding, the synthetic stone siding, the metal roofing, and the 30-year architectural grade shingle are all products to have a very long life so that there's not a need to replace them every 10 or 15 years.
Quick question for the applicant's attorney. I rarely, if ever, use a transcript for the resolutions. Can you just order me just the portion of the transcript where the architect just described all the green stuff?
Certainly.
Right.
And if it's helpful, I'm also able to provide you with a list as well.
Actually, all I need is the list.
I'm happy to provide you with the list, Mr. Drell.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. May I ask a quick question of energy performance? Can you confirm that each unit is individually metered, electric and gas, and that the responsibility is passed back for cost to the tenant? Each apartment has individually metered electric and gas. They get the gas and electric bills.
Thank you.
And there was one other feature that during construction, there will be a waste management plan that will help recycle construction debris, different dumpsters, so that it can be disposed of properly and into the hands where it can be recycled for those materials that are recyclable.
Thank you. And just for the sake of all of us keeping track, there were two comments from Burgess's memo that you've already touched on in your testimony, but just so we're all following along. Those were comment number one, which was asking for the bedroom allocation of the affordable units.
Which he did.
Exactly. And then the other was comment number four, which was asking about the proposed color palette and materials.
Which he did.
Right. Just keeping track.
Yep.
Those were all of my questions for you, Ms. Johansson. So if there are questions that the board or its professionals or the public have, we're happy to field any of those.
Anybody from the board have any questions? How about the professionals? Anything remaining? And the public? Any questions for this witness?
Nope.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we
need a quick little break for a paper change.
Sure.
Do you want to take a little break?
I'm happy to do like a little 5-minute
recess. We only have one witness left. That's good news.
Yeah. Let's just do a quick little.
Yeah.
You want a finger break?
The technology.
We're back on.
Now it's 9:09, and wait a second, it may be 9:10. 9:09, and we're back on broadcasting.
Is that Verizon time?
That's Verizon time.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Our next witness is Corey Chase, who's the project traffic engineer. Mr. Chase, I would ask that you please introduce yourself to the board and tell them, and the public, and tell them about your experience and qualifications, please.
Sure. Corey Chase, last name again is C-H-A-S-E, principal with the firm Dynamic Traffic, licensed professional engineer in the state of New Jersey, license is currently in good standing, a bachelor's of science degree in civil engineering from the University of Massachusetts, and I've been qualified as an expert in traffic engineering before over 100 municipalities throughout the state. Unfortunately, not this one.
It's a first for everything.
It's also your lucky night.
It is.
A lot of people have lucky night tonight.
Anybody have any questions about this expert's qualifications? Okay, we accept as a traffic engineer.
Okay, Mr. Chase, why don't you talk to us about the existing site access as well as the proposed site access?
Certainly. So I'm going to be referring to Exhibit A, that was previously marked A1. As Mr. Scavin has mentioned, our role in the application was to evaluate the site access, the traffic impacts as a result of the proposed development, the parking supply, and the various circulation elements throughout the property. As Mr. Scappin has mentioned, we will be providing a new right-in, right-out driveway along Route 31 northbound that will be subject to an NJDOT major access permit application, which we will be making. We also evaluated the site circulation and parking supply relative to the residential site improvement standards and to confirm that we comply with those requirements. In addition, we prepared a traffic impact study, which was dated June 25th, 2021, which was submitted as part of the application. What the traffic impact study did is it does a pre- and post-development analysis of the prevailing traffic conditions to determine if there are any negative impacts as a result of the proposed development. We took manual turning movement counts at the two signalized intersections most proximate to our site along Route 31. It's West Main Street to the north and then Halstead Street to the south. Given that, you know, we are still feeling some of the traffic impacts as a result of the pandemic, we did compare those traffic counts that we took in June of 2021 to historical NJDOT data along Route 31, and we adjusted those counts accordingly to account for any resulting decrease in traffic. So they have been adjusted to account for any potential impacts as a result of the pandemic to normalize those volumes. So we were starting from what would one would consider a typical traffic volume along the 31 corridor. Our analysis focused on the weekday morning, which is from 7 to 9 a.m., and the weekday evening from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. peak periods to assess those worst-case traffic impacts as a result.
Yeah, you dropped off at the end.
Sorry. Worst-case traffic impacts as a result of the proposed development. If you look on page 7 of our traffic impact study, table 5, that summarizes the projected trip generation as a result of the 146 residential units. The trip generation projections are based on data published by the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Sorry. The Institute of Transportation.
All the witnesses have been doing great. Pressure's on you.
Yeah, I see that.
Slow, enunciate, and loud.
Sir, my apologies. The Institute of Transportation Engineers Trip Generation Manual, the 10th edition, which is the current edition, and that's the national and state accepted standard for projecting traffic volumes. As you can see, the proposed 146 residential units are projected to generate 53 additional trips during the weekday morning peak hour and 64 additional trips during the weekday evening peak hour. That translates to approximately one trip every minute during the peak period. To give the board an idea as to the level of traffic generation that is, the NJDOT and the ITE have a threshold of 100 or more peak hour trips as being a significant increase in traffic. So we're approximately a maximum of 60% of that threshold. So this development wouldn't create what they would consider a significant increase in traffic on the adjacent roadway network. We did a pre- and post-development level of service analysis of those signalized intersections that I mentioned, as well as a set access point. Those results are summarized in Table 6 on page 8 of our traffic study. And what those results show is that there'll be no degradation in the overall level of service at those two signalized intersections as a result of this additional traffic. It equates to approximately 2% of the traffic along the Route 31 corridor. And again, as I've mentioned, it's about one trip every minute during the peak hour. So a negligible impact in traffic as a result of the development. The site driveway is calculated to operate at acceptable level of service D or better. So it's an average vehicle delay of less than 30 seconds during the peak hour. We would consider that to be an acceptable level of service along the Route 31 corridor.
Just a quick question?
Certainly.
Your Table 6 on page 8, there's no build, there's a build, and there's a build with MIT. What is MIT?
MIT is the abbreviation for mitigation.
Aha.
So okay. In this case, we looked at could there potentially be some minor traffic signal timing modifications that could be done at those two intersections to improve the conditions. And we found that with the reallocation of 1 to 2 seconds of green time, they could actually operate as good or better than they do today. Typically, in my professional experience with NJDOT, when you're talking about an adjustment of 1 to 2 seconds, it's so minimal that they don't even implement that because you're not really going to notice that change. But in the theoretical analysis that we provided, you know, that 1 to 2 second change would actually get you conditions that are better than today. As I mentioned, we also evaluated the site access, the circulation, and the parking for compliance with the residential site improvement standards. We do have 24-foot wide drive aisles throughout the development with the residential site improvement standards. We also have 9 feet wide by 20 feet deep parking stalls, which complies with the township requirements and actually exceeds the RSIS requirements of 9 feet by 18 feet. As Mr. Scavenin's mentioned, 285 parking stalls are required based on the RSIS requirements. We are proposing 287 spaces, so we do comply and exceed by 2 spaces. I won't get into the EV credit charging unless you want me to. I know that's been discussed.
I would just leave that alone.
That horse is dead, too.
Right, yeah. Right. I think we all know what's happening.
There's two horses are dead on that one.
Right, but the plan is to bank 20 spaces. Right. 267 built, 20 banked.
Correct.
And in our professional opinion, 267 spaces would be more than sufficient to accommodate the demands. There was a question as to how the spaces are distributed throughout the site, and Mr. Scavenin touched on this as well. There are approximately 26 spaces around the proposed community building, and there are also a bulk of spaces towards the rear of the subject property, towards the eastern property line. Given our experience with multifamily developments, you can't get all the spaces in immediate proximity to the buildings when you're talking about a development with multiple buildings. So it is common to have these areas of dispersion throughout the site. It is also common for residents to expect to not be able to get a parking spot directly in front of their front door. So we think that the supply and the distribution is adequate to accommodate the development. There is sidewalk provided throughout the development, so in the need that a guest or you do need to park and walk to your building, there is a dedicated pedestrian path to accommodate that. That's all I have for
that. Oh, I'm sorry, did you miss the end?
When you get to the end of your sentence.
I drop it. I apologize.
Do you need him to repeat anything?
No.
You're that good. Okay, good. So, Mr. Chase, the only comment that I was going to ask you to touch on, and this is just so we're all keeping track, was from the engineering report, and it was comment C as in cat, 1, B as in boy, 4. But that was the question regarding the parking near the community building, and so I think at this point we've already addressed that comment, unless there's a need for additional clarification. That one's been covered.
I just have one quick question. I don't know. Maybe there was a reason, and I don't think it makes a big impact, but is there any reason why the building that has 25 units isn't put at the end where you can gain that extra unit near the larger parking area? Because I believe that the building on the end is a 24 unit and there's a 25 unit building inside. Is that I don't know if that's going to be a major change for the applicant.
So I think that's probably not a question for Mr. Chase. It's probably more of a question for either of our other folks, but we can have one of them address it, perhaps in Mr. Chase's, when we're done with him.
I have a quickie question.
Sure.
How did you determine what's the peak morning rush and what's the peak afternoon rush?
We do manual turning movement counts, so we'll actually send an individual out to these intersections. They have a count board. They actually count all the cars passing that intersection during a 2-hour window. We'll take those volumes, and we'll find the peak 1 hour in that 2-hour window.
So this particular – can you put that aerial sheet up? It's not an exhibit because it's – same as in the plan. So show us the intersection that you use to determine.
The aerial map only shows one of the intersections.
study as an indicator of study to signalize the intersection of South, which is the 31 intersection of Halstead Street. And then we also studied the 31 signalized intersection of North.
Okay, great. Studying both of them, those are the ones that you use to determine the morning peak and the afternoon peak.
That's correct.
All right, got it. Thank you.
I have a question, just for public record. As part of the traffic analysis preparation, did you guys include any other, basically, are there any existing, currently approved or proposed, like major roadway improvements by the DOT that are being proposed that could potentially impact the traffic study that you guys have prepared in the future?
Sure. So we will review. The NJDOT publishes the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, or also known as the STIP. There are no pending funded major corridor improvements along the
program.
Thank
you.
Okay, so any questions from the board, from the professionals? From the public for this witness.
There was one other member of the public who apparently has left. So okay. Down one in the public.
I think it's exciting. Why won't leave at this stage of the game?
Thank you.
Okay.
If there are no further questions for Mr. Chase, I'll ask Ms. Johannesson to come up to address the question that Mr. Cluvier asked. So the question, just so we're all on the same page, was with regard to the locations of the buildings regarding, I think it was the 25-unit building and the 24-unit building, and why they were situated where they are.
Yeah.
So the two buildings that have that one additional townhouse is Building 1 and Building 4. The reason we positioned them here was because we liked how the roof line stepped down. That two-story element helped, I think, be a little bit more maybe residential looking, a little bit more welcoming, a little bit more interesting. This additional unit is not that far from the additional parking that was mentioned, a higher density near the clubhouse, so that affords that. But it's only one additional unit, and it's a two-bedroom unit, so it doesn't really shift too much. I think if we had significantly larger buildings with higher numbers of units, we would have looked at redistributing the parking a little bit more.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I have no further witnesses, Mr. Chair, so I don't know if you want to see if the public have comments.
That's what I would think. Let's now ask the public if they would like to make any comments, not necessarily ask questions of the witnesses.
I just want to thank you. This is the first time I've ever come to one of these events.
Well, you know what? Let's
come on up. You can't.
For next time.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. Good evening. Also,
you have a loud voice, so you're good.
Yeah, right? I do. I don't need it.
Yeah.
Thank you. My first name is Luis, L-U-I-S. Last name is Navas, N-A-Z as in Victor, A-S. I just stopped by to get some information, education, really.
Address.
Oh, 401 Sierra Drive, California. So I noticed this in the news, that this event was taking place this evening, and I rushed home, came here, and wanted to witness what this whole thing was about.
Yeah.
I picked up a lot of information about how you're trying to keep the waterways in the best condition as possible, right? The materials used for the apartments is very interesting too, with longevity, et cetera, et cetera, and the blend between the affordable and the market apartments. I just find it interesting. What I would like to learn in the future events would be what are the pros and cons in having these type of living quarters in the area. But that would be the next thing to look into. But overall, I it was very educational. And I thank you for your time. You're very, very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out. Okay, so.
Okay, well, I'll just do a quick recap. So it's the applicant, again, is Ingerman Development Company, LLC. The property is Block 70, Lot 6 and 6.01 to be consolidated. Street addresses are 1726 and 1730. And the applicant is seeking preliminary site plan approval as well as a variance to permit relief from the requirements related to retaining wall height and an exception from the ordinance with respect to the tree removal requirements. I think that, you know, we provided proofs as to that relief that's necessary. Given the site constraints that we have, including the buffering that's required for the site, as well as the peculiar shape, and that we are achieving the density that was required by the zoning ordinance, which is designed to help the township meet its affordable housing obligations, we think that we've put together a strong proposal. And we really appreciate all of your time and attention and thoughtful questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Anybody from the board have any questions or comments? If not, you know, I think we're up against a motion to approve preliminary site plan with the variance and the exception as noted. I'm not going to restate it because I haven't.
Right. Subject to all the conditions.
Subject to all of those that went back and forth.
Right.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Mr. Glazer.
I'll second.
You had a second.
Sure.
Thank you.
Ms. Butcher.
Ms. Butcher, sorry. I'm slowing down. It's past my bedtime. You have to roll call.
You need to say a word. Okay. For the roll call, Ms. Butcher?
Yes.
Mr. Glazer?
Yes.
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Ms. Kleinhans?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
And Mr. Samek?
Yes. Okay.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good job. Appreciate it.
In terms of next
steps. So next steps, we have the resolution on your prior application, mm-hmm. which would
– you going to do it tomorrow?
No, I'm
going to
do it tomorrow.
Look what you started.
Okay, so let's ask her.
I think you're done. We're done.
So, Mr. Chair, so we were planning on, because it's a fairly large resolution, it's gone through. Okay, so it went through three drafts, and it's ready for prime time. It's going to go out tomorrow for August 2. But since the resolution on this application is no way August 2, this one would be August 16, would your other client have a conniption if we did both resolutions on August 16 to save them from having to come out on August 2?
I will inquire
yes.
and find out.
Wait,
is the best I can do.
Well, and tell her that if she agrees for August 16 rather than August 2, we can cancel the August 2 meeting, and all the planning board members will have very warm feelings in their heart for her.
I'm sending a message right now. That's
too late. They already got their approval.
Good vibes are nice to have, though.
But you may have to. Anyway, you don't have to tell us now. But tomorrow we're going to distribute the resolution
from the last, right?
From the last one. Okay.
We're
not canceling any.
No, just
figure.
Right. You have to decide this.
Well, I wanted to check with this client because I do know I have a conflict on August 16th, but one of my colleagues will be able to attend the meeting. So
all right.
This one is fine.
Yeah, you'll find 16th. That. Right.
I have an inquiry in.
Okay,
and
you'll let us know.
I will let you know as soon as I know.
Okay.
Don't
say anything.
A. All right, I won't say anything.
The submission deadline is in September.
Yes, and in her case, August 31st is the submission deadline, but in her case, she's not submitting for tax credits. Her deadline is driven by closing obligations, which she's fine with.
Okay. So,
so that's what I need
to find out.
Yeah.
Okay, find out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will let you know.
Yep. Good. All right, thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Pleasure. You guys did a very good job.
Yes, I think. Oh, yeah, where?
No, these are marked exhibits.
Where did you put them?
Oh, here. Oh,
here. I saw Brett doing it before.
I'm going to attempt this.
What?
Thank you.
What?
Thank you.
We're ready to go.
He's already
got me.
Okay.
I'm vice chair. Let me do it.
I think you guys are. There's no reason to.
Nope.
Yeah. So you should just give me the signal or something, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. I'll be cool. Yeah. See you guys. After that. I know. And Marilyn Heard died today. Yeah,
it's interesting how that goes down. I think we don't need Tom, right? No.
Pleasure seeing everyone.
Yes. Yes, go.
And
unless you want it.
Let me get in this call, but you don't need me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to. Go ahead. So we're good. I mean, we don't have any. The next business on here is new business vouchers. There are none this week, so we'll take advantage of that. Maybe some reports. There's nobody from council. Oh, yeah.
Council, I don't think we've had a meeting since we last met.
Oh, it must be nice.
I'm trying to remember if we did.
Closed down.
No, we did, because we did, because we sent the, we're demanding the planning board do the redevelopment review.
Yes.
A demand from council. I didn't pull out the agenda to look. I don't remember anything other of significance that meeting.
Okay. Anything from the ordinance subcommittee?
We're still working on the site plan stuff. We
have another meeting this week. If you want, I have a quick 45-minute presentation I can give on it.
Yeah, can you? In slow motion?
After the meeting.
Well, that's too short. We want a longer one.
Second floor.
Progress continues on the ordinance subcommittee.
If you want language on the administrative review stuff, this is language in that EV law also about...
Okay.
Administrative review, if someone comes in with one of these, it's now inherently beneficial. I learned a lot in about 15 minutes during the meeting tonight.
Perfect.
They're inherently beneficial, and you can't require site plan approval for them. And
Administratively, that's one hell of a paralegal you have, I'll tell you what. Promising future for that.
So, John, would they go to the exemption language, or would it be administrative approval? Can we just... Could it be just an exemption if they comply?
Or you can do it in the ordinance, whatever you want. I'm saying if you wanted language for administrative, you can look at the statute, is what I'm saying. You don't have to be exempt the wheel.
Yeah. We're debating where it goes.
Yeah. I think it's interesting the precedent that sets moving forward.
Well, it's an amendment to the MLUL.
Right.
Right. So we'll have to adjust our ordinance eventually.
How it's
anyway.
Applied.
Right.
Yeah.
And is it like a lot of these things, they haven't thought out all the details.
Right.
So, for example, your very good question, well, does it apply to
affordable?
Or to the affordable. Right, or affordable. It's silent. Right? So these are things that are going to have to be...
Well, that's why it seems so incongruent.
I know.
You've got such a high set-aside.
Right.
And the demographic,
right.
You know, the thing itself is not set at a price point for that demographic.
Correct.
To take advantage of
right.
it being
correct.
Given a credit.
Right.
So you have the,
right. No one.
That's what it makes sense.
You ready for this? But no one thought about that.
Right.
The subsidence will come in
all that.
Subsequent amendments.
Yes, is correct.
It always does, isn't
that's
it?
That's exactly right.
Work out the kinks later on.
Right.
So.
Well, it's interesting if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Purple about it's an open space.
Statute versus the ordinance.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything from environmental, so I suppose that there's
a... I will second the motion.
Okay.
I'm supposed to make the motion.
No, I will make the motion.
That's
sorry,
fine.
Sure.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.